Herr Obama wurde gerade schon angesprochen und wie noch kein anderer Kandidat in der Geschichte Amerikas hat Barack Obama es geschafft, in seinem Wahlkampf Techniken und die Technologie des Internets zu benutzen. Es wurde getwittert, es wurden Blogs erstellt und so weiter und so fort. Und jetzt natürlich ist er Präsident und man kann so ein bisschen gespannt sein, wie er das wirklich einlöst. Und vor allen Dingen, wie machen das andere Politiker? Ein Mensch, der sich hauptberuflich damit beschäftigt, ist Mika Seifry. Er ist Mitbegründer einer jährlich stattfindenden Konferenz, die heißt Personal Democracy Forum. Und die gucken da halt, wie wirklich Technologie und das, was mit der Technologie anzustellen ist, denn die ganzen Politiker und auch die Politik beeinflusst. Und außerdem ist er auf der Seite techpresident.com immer wieder zu lesen. Und dort wird ganz speziell geguckt, wie gerade Präsidenten die Technik benutzen, um ihre Politik unter die Leute zu bringen. Wir gucken nochmal, ob alles installiert ist. Ach, der Rechner fährt noch hoch. Ja, der musste vorhin wegen eine Minute noch, aber das ist ein neuer Rechner, wurde mir gesagt. Das geht ja unglaublich schnell. Nee. Und da sind wir auch schon. Und deswegen einen großen Applaus bitte für Mika Seifry. Bitteschön.
How are we doing? Great. Hi, everyone. I suppose I should give people a moment to settle. I'm competing with lunch, I can tell. So it's very good to be here in Berlin, and I'm looking forward to this conversation with you. Hopefully we will have some time for conversation. I titled our talk Obama Agonists, or Agonizing Over Obama. And I should start by saying I heard a rumor that last year here at Republica there was a kind of like a drinking game anytime someone used the word Obama that they had to put €5 down. Because it was the buzzword, so I'm just going to put all my cash. I'll try not to use it too often. I'm going to suggest that that in thinking about Obama, that this is really a play in three parts. And we don't know yet whether it's a comedy, a tragedy, or a farce, or maybe it's a combination of all three. Because we're in the middle only of the second act, and it's either about change or the status quo. We're not really sure yet. I want to talk about Obama and the internet as a case study in this question of whether the internet really empowers anyone. As a case study in the problem of empowerment and democracy, and whether the internet is actually changing politics. But first, I want to ask the audience, how many of you came to hear Obama in Berlin the summer of 2008? Can you just raise? Actually, a few, okay. Not as many as I thought, perhaps. How did you feel then about that experience? It was exciting. It was a moment. Do you still feel the same way? Does anybody still feel the same way? I've got one hand. Well, you're not alone. I think the same question is troubling lots of us Americans. And part of the question that we're wrestling with is, how did this fantastic grassroots organizing campaign that made brilliant use of the internet produce this? The very people who championed the deregulation of Wall Street, Larry Summers, Timothy Geithner, are put in charge of economic policy by President Obama. So, Act One. Let's go back to the beginning and first look at the positive side of what Obama represented. Hope and change. How did we get here? First, I think we need to recognize that we are in a new age. This is the age of mass participation in politics. No longer do people just participate by voting at the end of the process. We now have the ability to create our own messages, to raise money, to organize, to do our own kinds of field work. The power to run a campaign is no longer in the hands of the consultants in the headquarters. This is a map, for example, of all the house parties that were registered on Barack Obama's website a few weeks before the election. These were people gathering to organize themselves to get out the vote, to knock on their neighbors' doors. And when you see it writ large, it really is quite amazing. I think it's important to remember how the 2008 presidential campaign started, when the internet first entered into the dialogue, when people realized that there was a new force, that voter-generated content, that voter-generated activism, thank you, was going to be a new element in this campaign. And let me see, I mean, I'm sure you all remember this video. Can we have the sound, please?
I intend to keep telling you exactly where I stand on all of the issues.
I'm looking at how to help you and other people who are hardworking like you. And I've really been impressed by how serious people are.
Because we all need to be part of the discussion if we're all going to be part of the solution.
I don't want people who already agree with me. I want honest, experienced, hardworking, patriotic people who want to be part of a team, the American team. I hope you've learned a little bit more about what I'm believing and trying to do and really helped this conversation about our country get started.
I hope to keep this conversation going all the way to November 2008.
Now, when the Vote Different video, the Hillary 1984 mashup, came out, the person who made it originally stayed anonymous. And at Tech President, we were actually one of the only blogs that was even able to get a comment out of him. It turns out he was a young Democratic political consultant who was supporting Obama. And when he came forward, he said, "I made the Vote Different ad because I wanted to express my feelings about the Democratic primary and because I wanted to show that an individual citizen can affect the process. This shows that the future of American politics rests in the hands of ordinary citizens. This ad was not the first citizen ad, and it will not be the last. The game has changed." And, whoops, no, I don't want to run that again. And indeed, the game is changing. There is no longer the ability of politicians to just rely on expensive, top-down broadcast media as their way to essentially force themselves on the public. That these lateral connections between citizens, the network effect, is becoming as important in politics as the top-down management of politics. This is a picture, for example, of a group of Obama activists in Los Angeles they're meeting together across several different neighborhoods. And what those strings are was an exercise where they asked people to visibly show the links that they had to each other, how they knew other people in the room. And the point is to actually demonstrate visually the lateral networking, the power that happens when citizens are connected to each other and can talk together about what they want and not just up to talk to a politician or be talked at from a politician. Obviously, this isn't the only thing that happened in 2008, and I think it would be a mistake to forget how important a charismatic messenger with a resonant message can also be. I like to say sometimes that the most important political organizer in the United States in 2007 and 2008 was actually not Barack Obama, it was George W. Bush, because he made so many people so angry and so fed up that they organized themselves. They got up off their own couches and they went looking for some way to be sure that they would throw him and any other Republican successor out of office. So we can't forget, it isn't just the technology, it's also the messenger and the message. Now, the context, obviously, is a situation now where just about everybody is online in the US. This chart is from 2008, and the main reason I put it up is not just to tell you that it's young people, we all know that, but even among people over the age of 65, more than half are online, and between 2004 and 2008, the number of older people in that age group getting online increased substantially. And maybe some of this is grandparents who want to Skype with their grandchildren, but the point is that even the last group in the US that has been lagging behind in terms of internet access, which is older people, even them. It isn't just that they're getting online. Again, it's participation, it's commenting, it's people posting their own content, sharing content with each other, creating a social network profile, reading and commenting on blogs. This phenomenon is the networked public sphere come to life. And so we are in effect in the US, and I'm sure here in Europe, swimming in an ocean of user-generated content. Just to give one fun example, if you look at all the videos that were made by the Obama and McCain campaigns in 2008 that were posted online, compared to the total number of views of videos made by voters mentioning Obama or McCain, just 10% of the views were of videos made by the campaigns. 1.5 billion in total, 90% of those videos being viewed were not made by the campaigns. This is the voter-generated content sea that we're swimming in. And it really bears repeating, before we go into a critique of what this all meant, just how substantial Obama's achievement was. At the end of the day, his campaign amassed 13 million email addresses of supporters. That is to say, roughly one out of every five votes that he got. He got about 65 million votes. He had nearly 4 million individual donors to his campaign. 2 million people created a profile on the campaign social network site, MyBo, mybarackobama.com. That site was the platform for activists generating 200,000 local events where they registered the event on the site. 70,000 people created their own fundraising page for Obama, which raised it's somewhere in the range of $40 million. This is user-generated, bottom-up fundraising. Thousands of local groups created, and ultimately, a record amount of money raised, $750 million, which is a huge number, just to give you a sense. That's more than Bush and Kerry raised in 2004, combined. Okay? Obama had double the number of donors of either Bush or Kerry in 2004. And two-thirds of this money was raised online. I put up his Facebook chart. Obama now has more than 8 million friends on Facebook. It's continued to climb even after the election. So the question, first I just need to make this point, because we forget, that were it not for all of this internet-powered organizing that enabled Obama to create his own kind of alternative political power base, in all likelihood, Hillary Clinton would currently be the president of the United States. She was the front runner in the Democratic primary. She had the high poll numbers. She had all the establishment supporters. She had a fantastic fundraising base from her husband's years in office. She had many of the local party officials endorsing her. That is conventionally all the ways that you win the nomination of your party. And 2008 was a change election. The odds of the Republicans holding on to the White House were not very good. So I would argue that were it not for the internet enabling Obama to create this alternative power base, and some mistakes that the Clinton campaign made about how they conducted, where they put their priorities in terms of the primaries, Hillary Clinton would be the president. Now, and this gets to the question I really want to dig into with you, who exactly was empowered by all of this grassroots organizing by Obama? And the first thing I want to start with, it's a little poignant to remember what election night was like in the United States. But I just want to convey a little bit of that for you. This is the scene outside the White House on election night after Barack Obama has been declared the winner, and it's 3 a.m. Okay? Okay, now we're into Act Two. By the way, one comment about that video. It's one of hundreds that you can find on YouTube that people uploaded from cities all over the United States. And the scene is repeated everywhere. Not only that, there are numerous examples of spontaneous crowds singing the Star Spangled Banner and other national hymns, thousands of people in the street. This has never happened in the United States in my lifetime, and I don't know if ever. So something very deep was tapped, especially among young people, as you could see. And so while it's easy to kind of go, eh, all politicians ultimately lie and manipulate, that kind of popular uprising, upswelling of emotion, I don't know what to call it, is the sort of thing that I think all small D Democrats should care very deeply about. When you raise people's hopes and you mobilize them, that's a good thing. And so while I think a lot of what Obama did was a myth in terms of not really empowering his base, it's a useful myth. Because when people are hopeful, they demand more change. They expect more. And so I'm very reluctant to give in to cynicism, or worse, this kind of stuff. This is from the Tea Party movement, by the way. It's one of the user-generated signs that cropped up starting sometime last year. Some artist made it as his statement, and now you see things like this at many of the anti-Obama rallies. I could show you much worse. I suspect I would be violating some of the laws in Germany, actually, if I were to try and show you some of the pictures comparing Obama to the Nazis. So, what happened? The myth was that the campaign was all about you. This is the homepage of the Barack Obama website, and the invitation to get involved, to use their organizing tools. And we were sold this story again and again, both during the campaign and afterwards, of that the people were the organization. This is Chris Hughes on the cover of Fast Company magazine. Chris was one of the founders of Facebook, who left Facebook to go volunteer very early in building Obama's online network. So after the campaign, he did good. He got on the cover of Fast Company. Joe Rosbars, who was one of the veterans of the Howard Dean campaign in 2004, that was the first to really tap the potential of all this bottom-up energy, ran the entire new media operation for the Obama campaign. Here he is quoted after the fact. It was going to be something organic. It was going to be bottom-up. Rolling Stone gave lots of promising, positive attention. Here's Al Gore's campaign manager saying, Obama didn't just take their money, he gave them seats at the table and allowed them to become players. It's talking about the grassroots again. And finally, David Plouffe, the campaign manager who really ran the operation, and he profiled by Esquire magazine, Obama owned the web because Plouffe believed in a few smart kids and let them go a little nuts. We will come back to Plouffe's actual role in a little bit. But the first thing is to bring some facts to the conversation. And the first fact is that this was not a revolution of grassroots donors, grassroots activists taking control of a presidential campaign. In the United States, money is still the determining factor for your viability in politics, and we have something that is colloquially referred to as the wealth primary, which takes place the year before anybody votes. And in the wealth primary, what all the presidential candidates are trying to do is demonstrate by their fundraising how strong they are. And typically, the way they do that is they raise as much money as fast as they can from as many wealthy donors as they can find. And we have a limit on how much they can give. The maximum is about $2,300 per donor, per candidate. And so when we talk about big donors and small donors in the U.S., a big donor is someone who is maxing out, who's giving $2,000 or more, and a small donor is typically under $200. That's partly because of how the reporting system works. If you give under $200, you actually don't even need to give your personal information. The campaign is not required to disclose that. But in the early money in the 2008 election, which is to say money donated in 2007, that in fact Obama got more from the financial sector than Hillary Clinton, 36% to her about 28%. In terms of people giving in $1,000 amounts or more in the early months, Obama, 60% of his money coming from $1,000 donors. Okay, so a little less than Hillary Clinton, but still a very significant amount. And if you compare Obama's money between 2008 and the last cycle, 2004, and then look at the percent from large donors, yes, it's true. He is the first presidential president, in fact, candidate to win the presidency with slightly less than half of his money from the big donors. But if you look at his profile compared to, say, Howard Dean was substantially got more of his money from small donors. That was not the case for Obama. So what really happened to this movement? And how were they used? Now, I'm going to play you a little bit of Obama at his best. Okay, here is Obama talking about the grassroots movement and how he saw it as continuing into his presidency as something that might be a powerful force for genuine change.
One of the things I'm really proud of about this campaign is I think we've built a structure that can sustain itself after the campaign. Because you know, people wonder how did this guy like win all these states, you know? How do you win Idaho by 40 points? It was because volunteers got together and they really built the campaign. They built the campaign. We weren't even there in Idaho, and suddenly we get a call from somebody saying, hey, I'm here in Idaho and I'm organizing, and can senators stop by sometime? So we didn't have originally, you know, big plans for Idaho, but people made this structure. So now we've got, you know, our database, you know, has a couple million people on there who are activated and inspired, and they know each other, and they're communicating to each other through these, you know, through the internet, and there are all kinds of different groups. And so what I want to do is to continue that after the election. Number one, we're going to keep on having town hall meetings. I want to keep on having conversations like this where I'm listening to voters. I want to really open up transparency in our government so that you guys know on a day-to-day basis what's happening. And I want to revamp our White House website or whatever. I mean, I know it's nice to take the virtual tour, the China room and all that stuff. But I mean, I want people to be able to say, you know, today this issue is going on. Today, that issue is going on. Today, President Obama talked about his proposal for $4,000 tuition credits for every student every year. It's going to be going into this congressional committee. These are the key leaders in the House and the Senate who are going to be deciding on the bill. Here are the groups that support it. You know, you should contact your congressman. You should, right? I mean, just creating the kind of situation where people, if they want to get involved, they have the information to do it, and it's easy. It's not, I mean, the information's out there right now, but you trying to track it down and find it in one easy place, that's hard. Having our cabinet members come out and do town hall meetings. I mean, when was the last time that anybody had any idea who, you know, what the Secretary of Health and Human Services was planning in terms of public health services, you know, or how we're gonna, right? They just don't get out of Washington. So send them out and let them be visible and let them listen to people. All those things make a difference. The more we can enlist the American people to pay attention and be involved, That's the only way we're going to move an agenda forward. That's
okay. The rest is more of the same. And that's good. By the way, I love the theory. Continue the movement, which is built by volunteers, make government more transparent, and this is the only way to defeat the special interests, to defeat the entrenched interests. Now, I think that's Obama at his best, actually. As he said, a structure that can sustain itself. Now, here's David Plouffe, the man who actually built and managed that structure, talking in his book after he took a year off after the election to reunite with his family and write a book, which he's made a lot of money from. And he says in the book that our email list had reached 13 million people. We had essentially created our own television network, only better, because we communicated with no filter to what would amount to about 20% of the total number of votes we would need to win. And those supporters would share our message or respond to attacks and so on and so forth. We had essentially created our own television network, only better. Now, I'm boiling down a great deal of what Plouffe has to say about the role of the grassroots and the internet in the campaign. And in fairness to him, you can go read his book, and it's a tiny bit more nuanced than this. Over the course of the campaign, they did slowly learn to give, to share a little bit of autonomy with their base. But they never shared power. This was, in his view, 13 million email addresses is like a television network, only better, because you can go without a filter directly to people. The mistake that he made and that was continued after the election is to keep treating the Obama base, those incredibly motivated kids, for example, as people you just talk at and not talk with. And they made that mistake because once they got into Washington, they chose much more of a conventional, inside the beltway approach to getting things done, as opposed to what Obama talked about, which is, I need the people to come with me, because only an engaged, mass, mobilized citizenry watching and participating in what Washington does every day can defeat the entrenched lobbies who are here. Now, what about changing how Washington works, right? We heard a lot about transparency. There's a lot of other talks going on today, in fact, about open government, which I'm sure are partly inspired by Obama's language and efforts in the open government arena. And indeed, on the first day of his administration, he signed an executive order, which we all thought was great, calling on government to become more open, participatory, and collaborative. And that is set in motion a whole process called the Open Government Initiative. And I should mention, I do a lot of work with the Sunlight Foundation and have been very, very involved in, deeply in participating and trying to affect that process for the good. There is some good stuff going on here, but we need to pay close attention to what actually is or isn't happening. So, early in the administration, Obama, they experimented with using the web to enable the public to ask him questions, and then he would answer the ones that bubbled to the top. The first time they did this, it was called Open for Questions. They used Google Moderator as the interface, which enables you to, you know, read a question and then vote whether you like it or not. And nearly 100,000 people participated. There was very little promotion of this, and yet they got a fairly high level of participation. Obama then had an event at the White House where he answered some of the top questions. The questions were supposed to be on the economy. And very interestingly, one of the top questions in a few categories was about legalizing marijuana and taxing it. as a way to raise revenue. And I should mention that the marijuana legalization people in the United States are generally laughed at by the establishment. They're considered to be hippies, and that it's not a serious issue. And so instead of, and even though 40 to 45% of Americans support legalization or at least decriminalization, the last thing Obama wanted to do was to show any respect to that group. And so even though they took advantage of an open platform and tried to push their questions up, the last thing he wanted to do was show any respect to that kind of citizen behavior. And in the actual event where he was answering the top questions, he said, yes, I know a lot of people think we should legalize marijuana as a way to raise revenue. Well, that's not how I'm going to handle the economy. Ha 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 ha, those internet people, ha 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 ha. And it was a little bit of a telling moment. They initiated something called the Open Government Dialogue, which played out over the course of the first 6 months of his administration. And they asked, they set up a site to ask people, how can we strengthen our democracy and promote efficiency and effectiveness by making government more transparent, participatory, and collaborative? And again, open platform. At this point, the Tea Party movement is beginning to build up steam as a new kind of grassroots movement in opposition to Obama, and there are a lot of crazy people in that movement, for example, who don't believe he was even born in the United States. We call them the birthers. If he wasn't born in the US, then he's not legitimately president. So they are demanding his birth certificate. So they jump onto this site. The top voted question on this site was about getting his birth certificate. Well, if it's government transparency, right? This is a sign of a breakdown in the connection. About 4,000 people submitted ideas in the Open Government Dialogue. The best kinds of things that have come out in terms of making government more open will make all the geeks here very happy. We do have a central government website for open data, and it's not just open, it's structured, it's downloadable, it's free. And there are a lot of really cool data sets that are beginning to get released, such as villages destroyed in Darfur, or the Code of Federal Regulations in XML. I'm sure somebody here thinks that's great. The airport, you know, flight delay information. That's all wonderful stuff. And you can even not only use the data, but people who are using it can comment and vote on its quality. And so this is, you know, at its best, a new kind of open, participatory, collaborative government, though I want to point out the vote numbers aren't all that high. They even have a blog where they're asking the public to keep helping them improve the data.gov site. They're using IdeaScale for that conversation. And even more interesting things are being developed. If you go to the State Department site, there's this interactive tool called Opinion Space, where you can register yourself and identify yourself with a few sliders where you stand on a few international issues, and then propose ideas to Secretary Clinton, and then see where you are situated in the opinion space compared to other people. It's eye candy. It's a fun site to play with. I have no idea how those ideas are actually going to influence the Secretary of State. But at least Obama, with his Open Government Initiative, has created space for people inside government and around it to try new things, to try blurring the boundary between the bureaucracy and the public and making some open doorways for information to move back and forth. And that is definitely an improvement over what we had for the last 8 years. But the response of the general public to all of this? No response. This is deeply geeky, wonky stuff. Now, here's what we're stuck with now. Obama is become, I think, quite conventional. The rhetoric during the campaign was all about, we're all in it together. We was the word, and some of us thought that he was the first internet candidate because he understood that the language of the internet is also about we. But here's a word cloud, for example, of him from just a few months ago at the peak of the fight for healthcare reform, and the main word Obama is using is I. I will fight for you. I ran for office to do these things. I had no illusions when I took on healthcare. I took this up because I want to ease the burden, blah, 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 blah. Not we, not us. And by the way, for a president who promised a transparent, accountable process, the signal decisions on the fight over healthcare reform were made behind closed doors and were basically secret deals with parts of the healthcare industry that the White House wanted to buy off. So very early on, they made a deal with the pharmaceutical industry to not, to basically break a campaign promise and not try to lower prices by allowing cheaper, competitive, safe drugs to be imported from Canada. This is how we pay, Americans pay much more for pharmaceutical drugs than Canadians, and you have seniors who literally get on buses and go north to buy their drugs and then come back. And early on, Obama made a deal in secret, which later was reported, when the lobbyist for the pharmaceutical lobby actually wanted to make sure that it was known that this deal was made so Obama couldn't pull out. And he also made a similar deal with the hospital lobby, and that's part of why they never were serious about what we call the public option, or the idea that there would be a government health insurance option alongside the private insurance options. These were done in secret. So much for transparency, so much for participation, so much for collaboration. So I'm going to end with this question. What happened to us? And I think that the real hard fact here is that we made a big mistake in investing too much hope in Obama and not enough in ourselves. The internet doesn't empower anybody. We empower ourselves. And the thank you. The notion that it happens on its own is a lie. And I think the mistake that so many Obama supporters made when they decided to give him a $50 or $100 check is they didn't demand a promise in return. And the tools themselves don't have any ability to do that, right? I mean, what I would like to suggest to us the next time this happens is that we act collectively with as much sense and power as all the entrenched interests do, which is to say, we demand something in return that we can hold accountable, and we make our support conditional. Because once you make it unconditional, they treat you like, well, you're usable. And I think a lot of people made that mistake. The second piece is that the many-to-many conversation, the connections between the citizens, that's where the real power is, but that's really hard to organize. And I don't think we have good enough tools. I don't think that the existing platforms that we use, whether it's email or somewhat more sophisticated tools like IdeaScale or Google Moderator, really allow for lateral communication and a depth of connection and thinking to develop. And so to the tool makers, I think you have a mandate to keep working on better tools for group collaboration, to enable stronger networks that are less easily manipulated from above. The bottom line is, if we're going to empower ourselves, we do need better tools, and we do need clearer thinking. Let's hope that this past experience is not just something that may disillusion us somewhat, but instead be a lesson for the next time. Let's keep the conversation going. You're all invited to Personal Democracy Forum in New York, which is now in our seventh year. It's June 3rd and 4th in New York City. And if you want to register, we'll give you a discount of $50 if you use this code for Republica. And that's it. I look forward to your questions and your comments. Thank you.
Ja, gibt es Fragen hier an Micha? Okay.
Yeah.
Hi, my name is Julius. Actually, I have many questions, but one is, do you think it is really possible to be effective as a US president with all this other kind of thinking, to be collaborative, to think we and not I, and fight against all the lobbyists?
Yeah, I think absolutely. I mean, I think that the potential here is to grasp that the medium, that we live in a new kind of medium space, okay? So Franklin Delano Roosevelt mastered radio, okay? It was the first mass broadcast medium, and he did these fireside chats during the Depression, and he established a personal connection with the public and kind of helped people understand where he was trying to take the country with the New Deal. And JFK was the master of television. And we have been living for 40 years under television-driven politics, which is to say it's all about the ability to beam a message from one person to millions of people and to buy the means of doing that. Okay? The internet is now a multi-way medium. And what we are beginning to see from below and a little bit from above is that there is power in the crowd, that there's wisdom in the crowd, and that we can make, in the case of the public space, the civic space, the government space, that we can actually make all of those things work better if we open up, if we listen, if we share information rather than control and hoard. So I think we're in the beginning of a very big transition, and the pressure to make these changes is coming from all sides. So the good news is that it is becoming a little bit harder for the entrenched interests to sustain their authority when it's possible for anybody to leak information to WikiLeaks or for an intern to challenge the authority of the CEO because, you know, they have access to the same information inside. There's so many ways that the old order is under challenge. So I'm an optimist. I think yes, the answer is absolutely yes.
Yeah, hi, I'm Matthias. I have two questions. First of all, where do you see Obama in 2012? Like, is he going to implode, or is he being able to tap into what he had before?
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, don't you think that the whole parliamentarian or presidential system, the way it is right now, is just not working if
yeah.
you really enable people? Because then you would have to become a moderator instead of being a powerful person, I think.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I think in 2012, the Obama is in very good shape because the Republican Party hasn't renovated itself. So, unfortunately, in America, you know, you only have two choices. And so the easiest way for him to get reelected will just be to point to whoever his opponent is. The Republicans need to go through a process at least similar to what the conservatives in Britain have done. So, you know, I mean, say whatever else you might say about David Cameron, but at least on issues like gay marriage or global warming, he's basically said, okay, you know, we no longer believe those stupid things we used to believe. Whereas the Republican Party right now is being driven, if anything, further to the right by this very angry, paranoid kind of base. It's not more than 20-25% of the population, but it's enough to make someone like Sarah Palin the front runner for 2012. And in an election between Barack Obama and Sarah Palin, he will win hands down. Not necessarily because of this kind of mass mobilization for him, but because the alternative is so much worse. So I don't see really an issue there. Can you remind me your second question? Oh, well, that's a whole other topic. I mean, whether it makes sense for us to imagine that one person runs a country, I mean, it's completely silly. And in many ways, the presidency is like a symbolic thing that the system gives us to reinforce our sense of, you know, consent to be governed. And it's more of a, you know, we project our needs and hopes onto this one individual, and then the trick for a successful president is how to appear to be many things to enough people in your coalition that the guy who likes Diet Cola and the guy who likes Classic Coke and the guy who likes Cherry Cola, each will think that you really are a person who only likes one of those things, and that unites all the cola lovers. Who the one thing they just can't stand seltzer, you know. I mean, that's the president is like a Rorschach test. There is a reason why we get presidents like that, I think, because they're in an impossible role. They have to be many things to many people. So your question about seriously governing has nothing to do with the president. To me, the president has the capacity to change consciousness because he still has this big bully pulpit that he can reach millions of people at any time in a time when attention is so drastically fragmented. The few places where you can still focus attention are important. So if he says, let the government try to be more open and participatory, what that actually means is that among the millions of people who actually work in government, the ones who do want to be more open and participatory now have been given a mandate to try something, whereas before, the previous president said, no, government has to stay closed, we don't share information, and then, you know, so it's much more about setting a tone than it is about actually governing. Other questions?
Yeah, da oben noch zwei.
Okay. Yeah, first of all, thanks for being here. I think despite all the flaws you mentioned, you're still light years ahead of us in terms of open government, so we can learn a lot. Anyway, my question to you is, you said that the Obama campaign had at least some aspects of astroturfing as opposed to a true grassroots campaign. Yeah. And after reading Plouffe's book, I gotta say, I totally agree with you. But would you say that the Tea Party movement is actually perhaps a better example of a grassroots movement taking advantage of all the tools available online?
Yes, I would say that. I would say that the Tea Party movement is several things at once. So one leg is the people who supported Ron Paul in the primaries, who are really hardcore libertarians. They were already using the internet in profoundly bottom-up kinds of ways, and that's just kept going. And then you add into it the other new, you know, in many cases these are just grassroots or people organizing something, and they said, I like the sound of that, I think government's too big, and I don't trust Obama. And so I'm going to form a Tea Party chapter, and they have absolutely no leader and no clear structure, and some of them, I think quite consciously, think in terms of networked, you know, almost net war, right, which is they can't stop, they don't know who to arrest, if you will, right? You know, it's one thing, one of the Tea Party leaders in Seattle was quoted as saying, you know, you can't arrest 3 million leaders if each one of them is potentially a Tea Party leader. But the weakness, and then there's a third leg, which is that the Republican establishment, pieces of it, have created AstroTurf organizations like the Tea Party Express that was founded by former lobbyists, and they're trying their best to channel this energy back into the Republican Party. Sarah Palin is trying to do that too. And I don't think it holds together very well. I mean, this is, again, you know, it's a great counterexample to my argument about empowering the base, And Joe Rosbars at the PDF conference that we had in Barcelona last fall famously said that in the end, the grassroots, the bottom up, has to be enforced from the top down. And I think he means, you know, you need both working in concert with each other. If you don't have that, you end up with crazy, all over the place, you know, rallies that have no focus, where the worst elements get to speak, where, you know, anything goes. And the result is that a lot of Americans are very turned off by the more extreme pieces of this. But, you know, the bigger picture, the bigger story, I think the Tea Party movement shows, again, that we are now swimming in an environment where anybody with a message that resonates can now spread it on their own. They don't need massive infusions of money. In their case, it doesn't help that they have Fox News. And, you know, we can talk about what that means, but I think we're going to continue to see that. If Obama, by the way, if the healthcare bill had failed, I think we would have seen an explosion on the left of people who were like, I can't take this anymore. I've kept my mouth shut. I'm trying to give him a chance, but he did it completely wrong, and I'm no longer going to be silent. By passing it, he actually bought himself more time and a second lease on life from his own base. And he has to keep delivering something to his base so that all those hopes that he raised don't translate into independent action.
Last question, please.
I'm wondering about crowding out the center in a way through the we, because the we is so dependent upon the social structure of a society, and especially if you look at the US, you have, well, essentially, a divided country pretty much right in the center. So if you do we, you will only ever get one part of the country. You will never be able to create a power base that will reach, I don't know, 66%, for example, yeah, to do some real change via public opinion. So in order to govern from the center, which you essentially need to do, you will have to rely upon the institutional frameworks, which is what Obama did in the end. He returned to parliamentary floor rules, yeah, to pass his health care bill.
Sure. I disagree. I think the problem is that they didn't take seriously the possibility in the transition from winning the election to governing, in figuring out how to continue this grassroots inclusive movement, which at its height was way more than just the left. Okay, there were a lot of independents and a lot of Republicans who decided to vote for Obama, but they wanted to give him a chance. They actually thought he would be different, and that not just a conventional liberal satisfying liberal interest groups. The thing is that there was no imagination on the part of the leadership in terms of planning. How they spend all their time planning the transition into power in very formal terms. Who's going to get what appointment? Who's going to get what job? And the grassroots transition, there was no planning. I mean, literally, the phones were ringing in Chicago the days after the election. People are calling all over the country. Now what? How do we keep going? And they had no answer. They had no website even for engaging people in a conversation about that. And the people who might have led that effort at convening and curating a meaningful national conversation, most of them were never brought into the administration, and they did not reach out to. There is a community of practice in the United States called deliberative democracy. And there's a very good article about this by a writer from Harvard named Archon Fung in the latest issue of the American Prospect magazine, called something like Obama's Tea Party, or a Tea Party of his own. And he points out that when we went through this horrible process with the town hall meetings where people are screaming at each other last summer, and the worst kind of nasty polarization is being, it didn't have to be like that. It's because Congress and the White House didn't take seriously the need to plan a better process for public engagement. we call a lot of this participation theater. You know, the town hall meetings were originally set up so that members of Congress could explain why they were voting the way they were, not to engage people in what they should do, but to tell them we've already decided. And that's pretty offensive. So I think it's a missed opportunity. And whether they can regain that opportunity, it's probably gone. I feel like in many ways, these decisions, whether it was the decision to keep Wall Street in charge of economic policy, or the decision to make those deals on healthcare, or the decision to basically treat your grassroots like a list that you can, you know, like a TV network only better, all those decisions were actually what the inner circle around Obama thought. And Obama himself, who may be a little more intelligent and a little more creative, certainly wasn't paying attention to these details. And maybe, frankly, I don't think cares. I mean, I don't know. But I think there is another way. And the problem is that you have to pay attention to the our current approach to doing public dialogue is broken. You can't do it through television. You can't let the cable channels and the most extreme voices be the only voices we hear. And by the way, the internet may not be helping that, right? YouTube videos of angry people shouting at each other just make us all feel worse. And we begin to think that there is no middle. The fact is that most Americans are in the middle. They are not ideological. They're mostly interested in what would get them effective government. I don't care about the label. Just give me a government that works. And if you can't make it work, then give me a refund. That's pretty much summarizing American politics. The opportunity for the Democrats ought to be showing that they can renovate how government works and so that it actually becomes a positive force in people's lives. And if they don't do that, they don't deserve power. I don't know what will follow, but that's what they should be doing. Anyway, thank you for your time, for your attention, and I'm happy to stick around and keep talking if you want, or see you in New York.
Vielen Dank, Mira Sifri.